So here we are at the bottom of page 353 and going on to page 355, pain and fatigue. I said at the beginning of this paper that pain, fatigue, and the sense of effort are the three major components of eye strain. I have spent a lot of time on the sense of effort because I think it is crucial to understanding eye strain, and it is not often discussed. But now I must turn to the other two and briefly sketch how they arise. A. Fatigue. We must first define the difference between fatigue and tiredness. Tiredness is a bodily feeling of limpness and weariness, but the stance of the person towards it is one of acceptance. Thus, feeling tired after reading for an hour or two, he simply desists from reading further. He just feels pleasantly satiated. No eye strain will develop. This commonly happens in presbyopes, who may simply complain that they cannot read for as long as they used to. They therefore do not develop eye strain. Fatigue, on the other hand, is a bodily feeling of limpness and weariness, but the stance of the person towards it is one of aversion. After reading a book for an hour or two, he may feel tired, but instead of being able to stop, he starts forcing himself to see, and so develops eye strain. It has been shown, in a footnote, that fatigue in any part of the body tends to arise in conflict situations, especially when there is incompatibility between a person's intention and his accomplishment. All parents are familiar with the child on a walk who is getting bored. He will perk up and be lively on the way home to getting an ice cream and then collapse into extreme fatigue on the walk home. The point I want to emphasize is that fatigue, like eye strain, can only be understood by taking into account the person's relationship to his world. It cannot be understood solely by physiology, as if fatigue was solely due to an accumulation of waste products in the muscle. Muscles. Yeah. So that was A, fatigue. Now B, pain. The pain of eye strain is usually thought to be muscular in origin. It is believed that patients with eye strain overtax their ciliary or extraocular muscles and so develop pain and other symptoms. I have criticized this theory in detail elsewhere, and a footnote, so will not repeat myself here except to emphasize that this is a purely peripheral theory as to the nature of pain. It assumes that pain can be explained in terms of peripheral stimuli alone. It takes no account of the situation, of the person suffering from it, or of the significance of the sensations to him. The errors that this leads into can be illustrated by an example from Sir Thomas Lewis's classical work on pain. A reference. Here Lewis states that The glands, penis and nipple are only sensitive to pain. But imagine the situation in which he tested for this. A hospital bed, probably with several keen white-coated clinicians surrounding it, and the patient lying modestly exposed while Lewis carefully, scrupulously tested for sensations with a fine bristle. Surely appropriate stimuli would have produced different sensations. Pain is a personal experience in which the person is thrown back and focused on the aching part. Footnote. It dissolved the community of self with world, so the person becomes bound to his body. This is why, if he is, quote, outside himself, he will not suffer pain. If one is kicked in the shins while playing football, one feels no pain as long as one is intent on the game. Contrarywise, chaotic noises or confused lines and movements can be painful to the ear or eye, for they throw us back on ourselves, on our own body, and destroy our contact with the world. In pain, there is a characteristic relationship between the person and the painful part. There is a feeling of helplessness about it. It is described as boring, gnawing, piercing, and so on, all of which imply that the person feels something is being done to him, that he himself is powerless, and that the painful part is in a sense external to him. There is always an experience of effort and restlessness in pain. The patient tosses and turns. He tightens his muscles in a fruitless attempt to get rid of the pain, to push it away as if it were external to him. It is experienced as an attack and is met with counterattack and often helpless rage. If the patient can be induced to relax by speaking to him or by forcing him to do so with more fear, the pain ceases. An ache or some discomfort may remain, but there is no more pain. It is easy to see the relation of all this to the situation in eye strain. It too is a state of powerless effort in which the eye is objectified and so felt to be external to the experienced body. If the patient ceases to make efforts to see, then both the pain and the sense of strain disappear. Summary. We're on page 355. To conclude, I have tried to show that the healthy man is always oriented towards the world. He is out in the world. Quotes. The mind is not a thing in itself, situated in the head or anywhere else, but is the manifestation of our mode of being in the world. I have illustrated this by discussing eye strain, in which the person, to a greater or lesser extent, loses contact with the visual world and is thrown back on himself and starts using his eyes as if they were instruments. I'll read the first two sentences of the summary again. To conclude, I have tried to show that the healthy man is always oriented toward the world. He is, quote, out in the world. The mind is not a thing in itself, situated in the head or anywhere else, but is the manifestation of our mode of being in the world. I have illustrated this by discussing eye strain, in which the person to a greater or lesser extent loses contact with the visual world and is thrown back on himself and starts using his eyes as if they were instruments. So that this paper with quite a bit to ponder, maybe to develop further. Yes.